Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you would like to send me during this broadcast, please address them to my email at bonk@aol.com, and we'll be happy to answer your questions. Tonight I have a very special last-minute guest. I want to thank her so much for coming on the show, and she's my dear friend, Deborah Sutton. Deborah, thank you so much for filling in tonight.
Oh, you're welcome, Bonnie. I'm glad to be here.
I know. You're scheduled for a couple of weeks from now, but you filled in early because, unfortunately, Dr. Hooper couldn't be here tonight. He had a family problem, and he sends his love to everyone, and he'll be back here soon. So at the last minute, thank you so much for doing the show, because whenever you're doing it, I know that many of our women really feel comforted by your words.
Oh, thank you.
So how are you doing, Deborah, in the hot summer of Texas?
I'm doing great.
It's very hot.
It's very hot here.
That's because you're in Texas.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So, Deborah, you know, you're a very active member and leader of our Straight Wives Club, as people know, who are part of our group. And also, last year you had a book come out, Signs of the Gay Husband, Identifying Closeted Gay Husbands and Behaviors. And I know that for the women who have bought this book and given me feedback, they've told me that it's been so helpful for them in putting together everything. So maybe you can talk a little bit first about your own story for people who don't know you, who are listening tonight or during the week, and then we'll move on to your book, okay?
Okay. I was married 22 years, and my husband wanted out of the marriage for no good reason. He didn't have any reason to want out of the marriage, and he just wanted out, and I didn't know why. I was very confused, and I went ahead and filed for divorce, and I got on a plane and left, leaving everything I own behind, even my clothes. I got here, and shortly after I got to Texas, where my family lives, I heard he had made sexual advances to a man that we both knew, so things started making sense. You know, the confusion throughout my marriage, and it all started coming together, and I did question him, and he denied it, and I knew it was true. I talked to him for 6 more months without bringing up the subject, and I was hoping he would just tell me the truth, and it wasn't coming. The truth wasn't coming. And I brought it up again, and he never spoke to me again. He broke all contact with me.
So let me ask you this question. The marriage was always off, wouldn't you say so?
Always. Always
okay.
off. But I didn't know what it was. I didn't know what it was. He suffered from alcoholism and depression, and he was sick. He had to go on treatment for hepatitis C, and that can cause depression. He was on antidepressant medication. So I always, you know, bought those reasons. That's why things were off.
You know, Deborah, we often talk about this on this show, and you and I often talk about it within our group. And we talk about how many times women who get into marriages where there is, you know, alcoholism, abuse, drug addiction, hepatitis, homosexuality, you know, any combination or all of those factors above, I can never say that women saw that they were marrying a gay man, because that would be totally ridiculous. But they knew something was off. And I think that, you know, when we ourselves have something off in our lives, that sometimes whatever the off is doesn't seem as bad, or we think we're going to make it better, or we can handle it, or we show them enough love, they're going to change. Did you used to feel like that too?
Absolutely. You know, I always, you know, I was always trying to fix whatever was wrong, trying to help him, trying to manage his life, you know, trying to help him get out of trouble. He'd had 4 DUIs while I was married to him. You know, always going to court with him, going to doctor's appointments with him.
But never knowing exactly what was creating these problems, right?
No, I didn't know. But then, you know.
Did he ever blame you?
He blamed me for things like, you know, when abuse happened and I filed charges on him, and then he ended up having a criminal record. He blamed me for having a criminal record. He blamed me for things like that.
Right. So, in other words, it wasn't the problem that he abused you. The problem was that you reported it, right?
Right.
So you became the problem, not him.
Right.
So, but even so, the marriage was off. How about when you first met him? Did you think it was off then?
I did, but I had come from a dysfunctional family, and my first marriage was dysfunctional, and I guess that was my normal. You know, I didn't know any other way.
Uh-huh. And I think that's very typical of what many of our women go through. They grow up in a household where there is a lot of dysfunction. And sometimes there's less dysfunction going into a marriage. It looks better, at least, you know, from the outside, than being trapped in what you're in. So when we fall for these men, and often these men are very much looking to get married, so they know how to be charming, they know how to lure you in, because they need somebody to marry them and they want somebody to love them. You know, and some of them themselves just can't deal with being gay. So they feel if they marry a woman, then they won't have that problem anymore, thinking that it's going to go away. But we certainly know the answer to that and how it happens, right?
Right.
It never goes away.
No.
So were there any signs when you were living with him that you could have noted?
We were together so much, spent so much time together, just the two of us. He would go off sometimes and not say that he was even leaving. I would wake up and he'd be gone. So, you know, like on a Saturday or Sunday. So I know now, you know, because he'd stay gone for a long time. I know now what he was doing. I didn't at the time.
And how about your intimacy with him?
We went, I lost count. It was 10 to 12 years without sexual intimacy. And yes, I thought that was very off, but, you know, I bought all the excuses about depression and being on medications, but that's a long time for a man to
sure
go
is.
Without sex.
But I guess what you don't know, you don't know. And if we don't have the people telling us around us that there's something really wrong with that, how would you know? You know, it's really interesting. I had a woman who was part of our support network many years ago. And I think I felt the worst for her out of for pretty much anyone. Because, you know, she had called me one day and she said that, you know, she was very distraught because she was married for over 30 years. And from the moment she got married, her husband was unable to perform any kind of sexual intimacy with her. And when she questioned it, he said, "I've really tried my best, but you just don't understand. I have a terrible illness. And as much as I try, it's stopping me from being intimate with you." So she really loved him. And she said, "You know what? I married him for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, you know, the whole deal." And she said that, "I'm going to stay with him because he loves me and he's really trying to be the best husband he can be. And look, other people have problems in life and, you know, you can't just make it about sex." You know, she justified it however she could. So now 30 years passed by and she thought that they had a decent marriage. And all of a sudden one day she finds a letter from a boyfriend telling her how wonderful their sex was together. And she was so distraught when she came to me because she said, "For 30 years, I made excuses for him. For 30 years, I really wanted to believe that he was ill, like he told me. For 30 years, I've never had any physical contact with him." She said, "We never even had sex on our wedding night." She said, "I'm still a virgin, you know, for the last 30 years because I realized I loved him and I wasn't going to leave him just because he couldn't have sex." But she says, "Now that I found out that he can have sex with men." And, you know, she was just so devastated. And I thought, you know what? How do men do this to women and not feel any sense of remorse? You know, just make them feel like there's just no way that they can do it and yet they're doing it. I don't get it. Do you?
No, and there is no remorse on their part. I mean, for so many of them, I mean, there's a few that have remorse and finally come out and tell their wife the truth. But so many of them, you know, walk away without ever telling their wives the truth. And then they remarry women.
Right. One of the problems is that there are a lot of groups out there, you know, spreading the word, "Do not tell your wife the truth." Because, you know, I've spoken to some of those guys. And they come to me and they say they need help and they need advice. And I tell them, well, let's start off where you need to be going to, which is telling your wife the truth that you are a gay man, which is why your marriage isn't working out. And they say to me, well, we were told by this group or that group or husbands of, you know, gay husbands of this or that, that if you do tell your wife, it's only going to create more problems for you. I said, create more problems how? So they say, well, then she can use it in court and go for more child support. So I said, so in other words, a few dollars is going to make the difference between you being honest and telling the truth to someone who you've been lying to all this time, who feels so bad about herself and about the marriage, making her think that it's her fault that the marriage is something's wrong, or paying a few dollars. So that's really what it's coming down to, right? And it is. And that's the sad part. That because of the money.
You can't even use it in court.
Well, that's what I thought. But somehow these men's groups, and there's a number of them, are giving out this information. That even though it can't be used in court.
I guess they think they can come to some kind of settlement agreement that's better for them if their wife doesn't know the truth, that she'll be
right.
more willing to
exactly.
work with them.
Mm-hmm. And there's that kind of selfishness there. So it's not unusual that men don't tell their wives the truth. And even when they're living with men in their future lives, they're still not telling the truth. They'll say, well, he's a friend, or I know him, and he was looking for a roommate. You know, they're still not telling the truth. But, of course, eventually women learn the truth because they're not that careful. And they have friends, and they're seen out there with their friends or on Facebook with their gay friends. So eventually the wife usually finds out one way or the other. But that's the only thing of this that I just don't get, is why men can't just do the right thing when it comes to this. And, you know, that's why I'm a very big believer that I don't believe in no-fault divorce when I believe there is fault here. And that if someone knowingly goes into a marriage and knowing that they're gay, and then they have to, you know, live a life of that's a lie and create havoc for the wife because they can't be the kind of husband she's ever going to need, then when it comes time to getting a divorce, why does she have to pay for this? I don't get it.
And the women end up paying, I mean, in so many ways, you know, whether it's rebuilding their lives and starting over with their children, and, you know, some women leave with nothing like I did.
You know, I had nothing either, and I had to start rebuilding my whole life, you know, financially and also, you know, in different, you know, ways, emotionally, right?
Yes. I wish there were laws against it, you know, because it's fraud.
Well, I can't necessarily say it's fraud because I do feel that men who go into these marriages, many of them really don't think that they're gay. And because they haven't been taught the truth either. You know, there was so much misinformation during the 1960s and 70s, especially by that Dr. Kinsey, who I think drove everybody crazy. By telling people that there's all different levels and rungs on his steps of where you stand on the sexual scale. And this was really the thought of the whole psychological community during those days, that you can be primarily heterosexual with a little leaning towards homosexuality or totally homosexual or totally heterosexual or different shades of gay in between, so to say. And so people grew up thinking, well, if I'm able to fall in love with a woman, and many of them fell in love the best they could. I mean, they really do love their wives, even if it's like a sister, but they still love them. Mm-hmm. And if I can have sex with her, maybe it's not going to be all the time, but, you know, sometimes that must mean that I'm not gay. And I do believe in my heart that most gay men went into these marriages thinking that I can change, that this marriage is going to make me better. It's going to make those feelings go away. It's going to make me kind of straight, you know? I think they really do think that. So I don't necessarily think it's fraud while they marry you. I think it's fraud the first time their penis starts getting raising up when they see men.
Yeah.
Because then at that point they know, excuse my adult language, but at that point.
But continue on in a marriage 20, 30, 40 years, become mm-hmm. fraud.
Then, right, when you're out there having sex with men, that's fraud. And when you're bringing home sexually transmitted diseases to women, that's also fraud, right?
Right.
And a lot of these men are very abusive to their wives because they're so frustrated in living in a marriage where they don't belong. You know, they don't really want to be there. They just feel they have to be there.
Mm-hmm.
And they set this up for themselves, and they take it out on you. So, you know, there's a lot of men who are physically abusive to their wives, and the wives never can understand why. Most of them are very emotionally abusive because they're someplace where they don't belong. Or they feel that the failures of their wives making them straight is, you know, the fault of the wives, that they couldn't do a better job being a wife to make those thoughts go away. Which you and I both know that's not the case at all, right?
Right.
So,
my marriage was abusive, but it was like cycles of
uh-huh.
abuse and makeup, and, you know, it just went on and on like that for years.
So, you're very open in your book, which is fascinating reading. If people haven't read it, Signs of a Gay Husband, Identifying Closeted Gay Husband Behaviors. And this book is very open and honest about your own life, right?
Right.
And you're really upfront in telling people that you had your own issues.
Yes.
And more issues developed while you were going with him and married to him, right?
Right. And I don't blame him for my own issues. You know, there are men out there saying that we're blaming our gay husbands for everything. No, that's just not true. I mean, I blame him for 22 years of lying and deception. But obviously, I didn't feel very good about myself in the first place to be with him.
Uh-huh. Right, we were willing to settle for so little, weren't we?
Yes.
That's what I tell women. You know, many times in these marriages, we are just willing to accept so little because we think that's all we're entitled to. And I think that when you live in an abusive situation, it really beats you down over time. And you start believing that I'm not entitled to anything more than this, right?
Right.
Or at least somebody loves me.
All those things, you know, like sexes and everything. And I'm going to honor my marriage vows. He can't help it if he's sick or depressed. You know, told myself all those things as well.
Mm-hmm. We made excuses, right?
Right.
And I don't think it's because we were stupid. I think it's because we are truly loving, good women who are always trying to fix everything. You know, we're real, you know, like those flipping the houses that you see all those telecommercials on TV.
Yes.
You know, you can learn how to flip houses and make a lot of money. I think we're like husband flippers when we get married. We know there's something really wrong with them, but we think if we show them enough love and we show them enough acceptance and we try to be wonderful wives for them, we're going to flip them over and, you know, make them whole again.
And I also thought, you know, that we had a friendship, and I still thought that after our divorce, but I don't think that he was a very good friend to me. I don't think that any
right.
longer.
Well, friendship is a two-way street. And, you know, every marriage that's a good marriage has a great friendship. But that's only a piece of the marriage. I mean, and it is a major piece. You need your best friend to be married to. But, you know, that's a small piece of it, and that's why so many of these men just don't get it, because they say, she's my best friend. I've always treated her like my best friend. Well, a best friend isn't what a wife is. I'm not saying it's not some of the aspects of being your best friend, but it's certainly a lot more than just being a best friend, because you and I could be best friends, but I don't want to sit and share my life with you in an intimate way.
Yes.
Or you with me. So I know I don't personalize it, but, you know, we're straight women. We want to have a straight man. So when you're looking for your best friend and you keep saying, well, she's my best friend, I don't know how I could ever live without her, Well, that's just selfishness, because you're not giving her the chance to live without you and to realize how important being in love is, and that, you know, makes you feel like a totally different person inside than someone who's just your best friend. So I still think that that's a sign of selfishness, that men are afraid to make a move when they say that. What do you think?
Oh, it is selfish. And he was the, like, to push you away, pull you back, push you away, pull you back, and
mm-hmm.
You know, I wouldn't have found out. You know, he had, since I moved back to Texas, he, at one point, he asked me if I would find us an apartment here. I believe he would have tried to come back. I told him I would never live with him again. I'm glad I found out and finally realized, you know, what the problem really was. I did find gay porn on the computer, in the computer history, once.
Uh-huh.
And he blamed me that I gave us a computer virus. But I even let that go. I mean, he had never brought porn into the house. I never saw anything like that. So, you know, I even overlooked. I don't know. I ask myself now, where was your head? You know, because I just now I can see it clearly. But when I was living in all that confusion, I couldn't see anything clear.
And I think that's a very common trait. They create an air of confusion and isolation. So we're always afraid to talk to people about it. I know that I certainly was afraid of that. And, you know, so that fear comes into it, and then we're isolated from our friends and our family. It's very unique that someone, you know, who is gay and married is going to, you know, put himself in a position like that. But, you know, like I say, he's always having to cover up every day of his life, you know, what he's actually about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think living that lie is really difficult. I don't know how he does it. Like, you know, I posted on Facebook, some people can fake, you know, I couldn't even fake liking somebody, pretending I like them. Here, people are faking a whole relationship, right?
Right. It has to be hard to be on guard like that every day. You know, I can see the behavior now, like he was so guarded and his privacy was so important to him, and, you know, and he didn't want me even opening a piece of mail if his name was on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't want me around when he was on the computer. You know, I see all that guarded behavior so clearly in hindsight.
I know that, but why would we even think about that? I mean, we marry a guy, we're not thinking, oh, something's wrong, he's gay. I mean, that's the last thing on our mind when things aren't going right, right?
Right, it's the last thing you want to believe.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't even understand it. How can we believe it? Because, first of all, people who are gay are not supposed to be marrying straight people. The whole premise of homosexuality is you like somebody who's the same as you are, right?
Right. And there's some gay men that would never think about marrying a woman or being with a woman sexually. And they
can't. Right. So, I don't know. I just think the whole thing is such a mess. But anyway, it's just one of the many things that we learned about as we go along. And there was an article that I posted for the group, and I thought it was a really good one. I know that you said, I think you had a chance to read it. And it was an article by John Pavlovitz that says, "Why God May Want You to Leave Your Marriage." And you read this, and you thought it was a good article, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I'll share it with our listeners, and then you can make comments, because I know how you feel. One of the true blessings of the work I do is getting to help people carry the burdens of life with them for a little while. To hear their real, unvarnished stories, even when those stories are heartbreaking, to share. A few months ago, a woman named Farah emailed me asking if I might have time to speak with her. I called her later that night, and after a moment of small talk, I asked her what was happening. She paused, her voice quivering as she began saying, "It's about my marriage." I listened silently over the next few minutes. Farah shared the story of how her 8-year-old marriage, recalling her husband's addiction, his verbal and physical abuse, his financial indiscretions, and the pattern of destructive behavior that he had many times brought up to her, on the brink of a breakdown or well beyond it. She talked about long stretches of estrangement, coldness, and sometimes outright contempt from her husband, only briefly interrupted by his, quote, emergency efforts to stare off a divorce that I found, divorce a few times she found the nerve to give full voice to her frustrations. He would revive some semblance of the man she married for a few days or weeks, invariably slipping back into his previous patterns once he felt as though she'd understand the disaster. Though I labored sobs, through labored sobs, she told me that she had endured too much fear and received too many wounds, and she had finally reached her breaking point. She asked me what should she do. "What do you think you should do?" I asked her. "If you were giving a friend, of course, I know about her marriage and what you know about your own, and that would be your advice to her." "I tell her she has to leave," she said immediately, and then seemed to catch herself. "But I'm a Christian, and I know God hates divorce. God does hate divorce, right?" I thought for a second. "Well, I imagine God doesn't rejoice over marriage ending," I said to her. "But do you think God's okay with it, with you being abused and living without love? Do you think it's possible that God might hate that even more?" She suddenly stopped crying and said, "I never considered that. As a pastor in a local church ministry for the past 19 years, I've heard hundreds of stories like Sarah's, and I've seen the way organized religion can tend to nurture women. When women like her finally summon up enough courage to the depths of their suffering with the church, they often find themselves sitting in the front of a vast pastor or minister, usually a man, and hearing a frightening similar refrain." So in all too glorious religious patriarchal truth, she is given the full burden of a marital reconciliation, instructed to be more patient, to make herself more attractive, to be more sexually open, to be more tolerant, to consider the children. In other words, she is completely saddened with all the guilt of staying in, something that she may be incredibly dangerous and painful in order to please God. I don't think marriage is an institution itself that's sacred. It's the purest and truest sense, a contract, a covenant. There isn't anything magical or spiritual about this. I believe a specific marriage is made sacred when those two people give the best of themselves and when they sacrifice for each other. And they are mutually invested in their own union. That's what makes it holy. If there's magic, this is where it lives. The vows that a couple takes to one another are serious and important, but they're also conditional. They are promises made with the expectation of being received back. In other words, they are contingent on the other's full partnership. The idea of two becoming one only really works when each of those two people are willing to carry equal weight in their relationship. Those wedding days, for better or worse promises, are made with the agreement as a given. And when that fails to be true, the marriage covenant is already in default. In Sarah's case, she was trying to shoulder an entire relationship alone, not to mention their children, care, their home, and their finances, and still someone feeling spiritually inadequate. She needed permission to demand what she deserved and to know that God was okay with this. Divorce is sad and it's tragic and it's devastating for everyone involved, but it isn't a sin. More than that, sometimes it isn't anymore. God honoring for a person of faith to stay in an abusive, dangerous, loveless marriage, and it is to walk away from it. In fact, that may be the most faith-affirming thing one can do. Among Jesus' greatest commandments for his people is that we are able to love each other as we love ourselves. Yes, in this way, our greatest act of self-love may be to remove ourselves from the harm's way. God's heart for all of us is abundant in life, and that sometimes means plan B. It says, friend, if you're struggling in your marriage right now, there's no one who can tell you when you've done enough, when you've endured enough, and when you've exhausted all your options to save it. You should absolutely do all you can to preserve and heal and sustain that union. Work, pray, sweat, and sacrifice for it. But ultimately, there may come a day when you do need to leave for your safety, for your sanity, or simply to embrace the good that God desires for you in this short lifetime here. And along with the crushing weight of sadness and grief and disappointment that would certainly come with this realization, the biggest mistake would be to also place upon your aching, weary shoulders the disapproval of God. God knows the hell you've been through more than anyone. Hear this, beloved, God doesn't hate divorce more than God adores you. So wasn't that good?
It's very good, and I agree with it.
Mm-hmm.
God doesn't expect us to stay where we're being abused.
Well, that's how I feel. I feel women have control over that.
Yes.
And then some of them say, well, you don't understand with divorce, it's, you know, you make a promise before God. But that's not always what it's about, right?
You know, coming out of this, I realize, and what he's saying is true, if it's not mutual,
uh-huh.
when you're being abused, you know, that God doesn't expect us to live in a marriage where we're being abused.
Uh-huh. Exactly. So, I thought that was a very interesting article for so many of our women who vacillate one way or the other, feeling that if they do it, they're going against God. But it would never be God's intention to make you suffer. Wouldn't you say so, Deb?
I would say so. And, you know, there were times that, you know, I thought, well, I made this vow, and I have to honor it and keep it. You know, but coming out of this, I see now that God doesn't expect us to stay where we're being abused.
Uh-huh.
God would hate
exactly.
that.
I mean, that doesn't even make any sense. Why would we, he want for us to be abused? If anything, he's giving us the courage and the strength to leave an abusive situation, right?
Yes.
So it's really important to keep your prayers going during this time. You know, believe God is on your side and doing the thing that's right for you. And you can't fix every problem. Some are just not fixable. Some of them are going to be, really frustrated if you keep staying in a situation where you don't belong. Do you agree with that, Deb?
I agree. And you're putting your own life in danger, too, when you stay with someone that's abusive. And God wouldn't want you to put your own life in danger.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely not. Deb, tell us what it took to write a book.
What it took to write a book? Is that
mm-hmm.
what did you say?
Yeah, for your book.
For my book? What do you, like, well, I, do you mean the process?
Right, the process.
Okay. Well, I started with a blog, and then I took some of my blog posts and, put them in the order that I wanted for a book.
Uh-huh.
Then I paid somebody to make a file that
you could download.
Create a space would accept. You know, after I had everything together that I, the way I wanted it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I submitted it.
You just gather some stories from some of the women in the group, right?
Yes, yes. I did. And there's,
mm-hmm.
I think, four women in our group, and there's stories in the book.
So these stories, now some of them are real eye-openers, right?
Yes.
What was the what was the strangest story you heard during this time?
The strangest story?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
They were all pretty unusual and unique to each person's situation.
I think the length of years that we stay in the marriage, I think, was what really got me. Some of the women had been married, 30, 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
And
given a whole lifetime to a gay man, right?
Yes.
Without him even having any idea or any clue.
No, and then they, you know, find it by accident on the computer,
mm-hmm.
letters to their lovers or letters from their husband's lover, and it's so shocking when they find
it. Really
it
is.
I mean, to be married that long and then find out you didn't even know who you were married to.
Now you're home with a new sexually transmitted disease on top of it.
Yeah.
Many of our women were getting them in the late 80s, early 90s, middle 90s. But have you met a lot of people through the Straightwise Network?
I have.
Or the Straightwise Club that we have.
Yeah, and most of the men don't admit it. There's a few that do admit it, but we took a poll one time in the group, and the majority of women, their husbands never admitted it to them, even though they found.
One of the things that you have in your book, you say the dictionary says, defining friendship is your gay husband your best friend. The dictionary describes that although there are many forms of friendship, some of which may vary from place to place, certain characteristics are present in many types of friendships. These include affection, sympathy, empathy, honesty, altruism, mutual understanding and accomplishment, enjoyment of each other's company, trust, and the ability to be oneself, express one's feelings, and make mistakes without fear of judgment from the friend. Why is it when you are married to a closeted gay husband, the best friend role is so overly emphasized? I have to say I've also seen this in straight marriages, also when one partner no longer loves the other, but stays for the children or financial reasons. They tell you that you are their best friend. You know them better than anyone else. You know the story, right, Deb?
Yes.
Because, this happens so often. They are the crumbs they throw at you to make up for a real lack of interest. They are biding their time until the real deal comes along. Once they find what they're truly looking for, the man of their dreams, or the new beard, you'll see how quickly you are discarded. But wait, I thought we were going to be best friends. Should I kill myself? Can't we still be friends? I don't think there will be room in his life for you and his new boyfriend or his new beard. What about all the years we spent together? All the years you and I was your best friend, your only friend. I thought I knew you like no other. You will find the years meant nothing. It will not matter that you raised a family together or started a business together. You spent decades building your life with this person, and you, the best friend or beard for the closeted gay husband. This is not what I signed up for when I got married. I wanted love, intimacy, and companionship. So basically what you're saying here is that somebody who does this to you and claims your best friend. Are they really your best friend, Deb?
No. And it took me a couple of years after my divorce to realize that he was never my friend. He had been in my life 22 years. He knew my family, my grandchildren, my mother. And I had a granddaughter that was in an accident and almost died. And then my mother died, and I never even got so much as a condolence. And this was like a year after our divorce. And I realized at that point that he was never my friend.
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that you and I have seen so many situations that are unusual, and that no two situations are ever the same, that everyone has her own story, and even though there's some similarities, there's many differences, but the bottom line is still the bottom line, right?
Right.
It's still that lack of, you know, connection that you make to the person that you supposedly love with all your heart. And that's
and
because he can't connect to you.
Right. And I realized also that I was very insignificant in the backdrop of his life. I'm just there in the backdrop.
Uh-huh.
He's living his life. He's doing what he wants, but I'm pretty insignificant. Uh-huh. And my needs were really never considered.
That's what's so sad. So many wasted years when you could have been productive and doing things that were really, you know, so positive, but being bogged down with a man and his secret. And, you know, that's why I say, well, these situations are so different. You know, we talk about domestic violence, and we talk about that some of our women have had domestic violence issues. And it's just so upsetting to me because when a man, you know, like I say, has sexual violence against a woman, you know, especially when he's a gay man, then it's out of anger.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it is like rape because that's how he's treating her as a rape, you know, as a rape victim. And there are a few of the husbands who also have these characteristics. But one of the things that I wanted to bring up about that, because I was reading several articles about, you know, rape and abuse, you know, because it's a big topic for a lot of our women. But how do you feel, Deb? Because I read this article that there's a group of men out there who claim that they are victims of women who rape them. Have you heard about that group?
I've heard about that group, and that just seems impossible to me. Men are very much stronger than women, and
mm-hmm.
you know, they're so much stronger they could overpower a woman. I just don't buy that a woman could rape a man.
Yeah, I'm not saying that there aren't women who can be very domineering or dominant,
mm-hmm.
but I just don't understand the whole concept that a man can be raped. That's like really something beyond my understanding. Because, like you said, it's a strength thing, right?
Right.
That you can't overpower, I mean, a man can't overpower a woman. And I just don't understand how he can possibly have sex with a woman if he's being abused and he doesn't want to be.
Right.
And so traumatizing for him. So maybe that's something we'll have to study more and look for some more insight on, because I know that I've read a few things, like there's some of these very odd issues out there that I read about. And, you know, that's when I ran into a few weeks ago when somebody brought it to my attention. And I thought, wow, that's really different. You know, I'm just not really familiar with this.
I think I read that. That man has been claiming that he was raped by a woman for the past 30 years now. So.
Yeah. I mean, it happened when he was young, that he was violently raped by a woman, and, you know, it was an incident that he's never been able to get past, and it's really affected him his whole life, and he's, you know, on this road now to let people now, and there's groups for these men now, men who are raped by women, which I thought was really interesting. You just never know what you're going to find on the internet, right?
You don't. I guess there could be cases of statutory rape if the guy's really young and has sex with an older woman, like.
Well, that's
that case.
Different.
Yes.
You know, they call that statutory rape because when it's with a minor, they say that the youth doesn't have the ability to make a decision on whether he really wants to have sex or not. So I've seen women, we've all seen those stories on Lifetime with women getting arrested, these teachers,
mm-hmm.
and put away. There was this one woman who was totally obsessed with this young guy, went to jail, came out, went back with him again, even though she knew that she was risking going back to jail. But these guys are, like, kind of participating with the women. So even though it's statutory rape because of the age, it's not necessarily the same thing as getting raped by someone who, you know, is
like
repulsive to you and someone you don't want to have sex with, right?
Well, rape is a forcible act, and I don't see how a woman could force a man.
I don't either. I'm really trying to understand it, and I've spoken to different men about it. And, you know, they've said that they know that men can rape men.
Yes.
I mean, that's something very, very serious and very horrible that that happens, you know, in my opinion. You know, it's no different than a man raping a woman.
Yeah, it's horrible.
But I still don't quite get the women raping the men, but... Maybe there's something you and I are missing. Maybe somebody can explain it to us. Maybe.
Maybe.
So, how do people get your book?
It's on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
It's either you can get it in paperback or ebook.
Mhm. I have a wonderful copy here in paperback, and I love the feel of the paperback book. You know, I'm still not into ebooks yet. Maybe some younger people are, but at least you have your choice.
Yeah.
And you can read in here Deborah's story. And also there's some guest commentaries in here from other women who are part of our network that are very enjoyable as well. And you'll learn about all different kinds of gay husbands in this book, what to look for, what the signs are, things that you may be thinking, but you can't pinpoint it. And Deborah really leads you right to the answers there in this book, right, Deb?
Yes. I hope so. I mean, well, I just took my 22, the things that I missed in my marriage. You know, in hindsight, I could see it. And after reading your books, Bonnie, I could see all the things that I missed.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that you really brought it together for me. And it's a real eye-opener. I mean, I was sitting up in bed at night reading this, or I would read one of your books and then wake up in the middle of the night and sit straight up in bed and say, oh, that happened to me.
Yeah, I think by sharing stories, you really interconnect well with people. And that's why I was so happy when you were writing this book. And even though people have said to me, well, who is she to write the book? Who is she? She's a veteran of a 22-year marriage, and that's all that needs to be said. I mean, you learn from your marriage, and you reach out to people, and you're always there as a support for people. And this helps the people across the board. It doesn't matter what your profession is. Even though now, Deb, you're now certified as a coach, right? What's your certification?
My certification was for Americans with disability, you know, going through the court system.
Uh-huh. You became a professional advocate?
Yes.
And you're doing the coursework for that. And that was a wonderful course to teach you that people who go through post-traumatic stress, that's also a disability, right?
Right.
And so that's a real in for us because a lot of the women that we work with do go through post-traumatic stress. And they are going to need advocacy when they get to the court system. So this is a new thing that, you know, women can go with an advocate, you know, if they're suffering from post-traumatic stress. Is that my, am I stating that correctly?
Yes, yes, that's true.
But you learned a lot in that course, right?
Oh, I did. I learned a lot, and I was really happy to take the course, and I met some nice people.
Uh-huh.
And I think she's given another course now. Yes.
It's an excellent opportunity for people to take this course to learn how to become advocates for people with disabilities. And it's a good opportunity for women to make some extra money because there's a growing need for this around the country. If you are interested, just let me know and I'll pass on the information to you. So, Deborah, we're coming to the end of our show. Didn't that hour go fast?
It went fast.
Uh-huh.
Time flies when you're having fun.
Well, you'll be having some more of it in a few weeks, Deb. But I really do appreciate you filling in
with
Brian tonight. And, you know, you're someone who I love and I respect and who I know that so many of our women look up to you as a role model.
Well, thank you, Vonnie.
Well,
and I always enjoy talking to you. Excuse me?
All right, sweetie. I said, I love having you on the show, and you'll be coming back very soon with us. And thank you so much again for filling in.
Thank you, Vonnie, for having me.
My pleasure. And to all of our listeners, we want to wish you a wonderful week. And we'll be back next week with one of my favorite women in the world, Suzette Vernon. Isn't Suzette great, Deborah?
Oh, she's wonderful. I've listened to her many times on your show.
Yeah, I love Suzette. She's really fascinating. And she's running her seminar about finding good men because she found one and she wants everybody to find one. So if you are interested in her seminars, it's a free seminar starting this week coming up. If you're interested, you're more than welcome to let me know and I'll send you out her information. So, Deborah, thank you once again. You know I love you.
Well, I love you too, Bonnie.
All right, and love to all of our listeners and members of our support network, and we'll be back again with you next week. Good night, Deborah.
Good night.
All right, we'll end up with a song, everybody. Well, I was trying to end with the song, Deb. Well, maybe I can find another one here that I really like. Let's see if this will play. These are some words of advice to everyone.
I can't teach you anything. Please, teacher, teach me something. Nice teacher, teach me something. I'm as awkward as a camel. That's not the worst. My 2 feet haven't met yet, but I'll be teacher's pet yet, 'cause I'm going to learn to dance on birds.
And by the way, if my dear friend Scott's listening to this, you're going to love this song, Scott.
Please, teacher, teach me something. Nice teacher, teach me something. I'm as awkward as a camel. That's not the worst. My 2 feet haven't met yet, but I'll be teacher's pet yet, 'cause I'm going to learn to dance on birds.
Nothing's impossible.
Nothing.
I have found. When my chin is on the ground, I pick myself up.
Dust myself off.
All over again. Don't lose your confidence if you slip. Be grateful for a pleasant trip and pick yourself up. Dust yourself off. Start all over again. Work like a soul in fire. The battle of the day is won. You may be sick and tired, but you'll be a man, my son. Will you remember? remember the famous men who had to fall to rise again. So take a deep breath, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again.
I'll get some self-assurance if your endurance is great. I'll learn by easy stages if you're courageous and wait. To feel the strength I want to, I must hang on to your hand. Maybe by the time I'm 50, I'll get up and do a nifty.
All right, I'll show you again. Now remember, three steps to the left, three steps to the right.
That's the right.
And turn. All right. One, two, three.
I know, I'm fine. Pick yourself up, dust yourself off, start all over again.
Listen, no one could teach you to dance in a million years.